This is Monday, September 4th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up, U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley said North Korea's relentless actions show that its leader, Kim Jong-un, is begging for war.
War is never something the United States wants. We don't want it now. But our country's patience is not unlimited.
She says the time has come for the council to adopt the strongest diplomatic measures. Also ahead, the U.S. president is set to announce tomorrow his decision on what might happen to the children of illegal immigrants. And you'll hear about a way to feed those who are hungry, the communal refrigerator, all on today's International Edition. North Korea is claiming that its sixth nuclear detonation Sunday was a hydrogen bomb, its first in nearly a year. Pyongyang said it is capable of putting the device atop an intercontinental ballistic missile. The detonation, registered with international seismic agencies as a 6.3 magnitude event, up to 10 times more powerful than the North's previous blast. It prompted international condemnation and a warning from U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis, who met with President Donald Trump and his national security team at the White House Sunday.
We made clear that we have the ability to defend ourselves and our allies, South Korea and Japan, from any attack, and our commitments among the allies are ironclad. Any threat to the United States or its territories, including Guam, or our allies, will be met with a massive military response, a response both effective and overwhelming.
Mattis said the U.S. has no intention of annihilating North Korea, but does have options to do so. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin told Fox News Sunday he's working on yet another set of sanctions that could involve cutting off U.S. trade with countries doing business with Pyongyang.
We're going to strongly consider everything at this point. And again, I will draft a package for his strong consideration that would go as far as cutting off all trade or other business. And this behavior is unacceptable. And if countries want to do business with the United States, they obviously will be working with our allies and others to cut off North Korea economically.
Mnuchin said the president told him the time for just talk, but for action, calling North Korea's behavior unacceptable, insisting the peninsula must be denuclearized. The South Koreans Monday conducted a live-fire missile drill with North Korea's nuclear test site as the virtual target. Sunday, President Trump tweeted South Korea is finding that their talk of appeasement with North Korea won't work. The U.S. is also reportedly considering pulling out of its free trade pact with Seoul. All of this adds up to even a higher level of tension. Jean Lee is a global fellow with the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. She joins us from Seoul. Jean, there are those who are saying that Pyongyang may have outmaneuvered the West, especially the United States, is into an untenable position. Do you agree with that?
North Korea has a very carefully crafted strategy, and that requires that the United States have a very carefully crafted strategy as well. However, one of the things we're seeing is mixed messages coming out of the White House, not to mention mixed messages coming out of the White House and the Blue House here in South Korea. So we're seeing some confusion, and that is only really going to benefit the North Koreans. They are going to relish that. They are going to take advantage of that. What we needed to see, frankly, was complete unity on the part of the United States and its allies. The strongest stance would be for the United States and its allies in this region to show that they're on the same page in terms of how to deal with North Korea. Exposing the rift between Seoul and Washington is not good for the United States or for anyone dealing with North Korea. That's something that the North Koreans will take advantage of. So it does put Washington in a position of weakness in a certain sense.
You mentioned that North Korea, the DPRK, does have a solid plan in mind. What is that plan, as you see it?
North Korea has a couple objectives. The leader of North Korea, Kim Jong-un, has a few objectives. One of the things he does need is to create a kind of wartime frenzy. So he needs to create tension. That tension and rhetoric from Washington helps him justify and rationalize testing nuclear devices and ballistic missiles. And so the more tense the situation is, the more rationale he has to continue testing. And the more he can test, the closer he gets to perfecting this technology. So, if Washington is thinking the tougher we talk, the more likely they are to back down, that is completely wrong. That is a complete misreading of the North Korean psychology. If anything, it just further emboldens them. And so there's a basic lack of understanding in terms of what would get the North Koreans to back down and to stop testing. That said, the United States and South Korea are perfectly entitled to show they need to show their own people that they can defend their populations from any kind of threat. So it's completely understandable, the show of force that we're seeing. I think what's important is what happens next. I'm sitting here in South Korea, so we're right in the path of any potential destruction. What I don't want to see is for this to tip over into military conflict. What I would like to see is a very carefully coordinated strategy on the part of the U.S. and its allies to de-escalate these tensions and eventually come up with a strategy to get the North Koreans to stop building nuclear weapons and testing ballistic missiles.
And what would that strategy be in your mind?
It's understandable that they're going to want to punish North Korea for these very dangerous and illicit provocations. But at some point, they're going to have to give everybody a way out, a face-saving way out of this. So they're going to have to back down. All sides are going to have to back down. We're going to need to see a period of quiet and eventually some discussion about how to resolve this. So what I think that is terrifying for us here in the region is to see the tensions reach a certain point where somebody is going to feel like they need to make a move, and if that could trigger some sort of conflict that could be disastrous for this region. That's certainly not what we want.
Is there anything in your estimation that can cause North Korea to back down from its current trajectory?
It would be very important for the White House and the other capitals in the region to think about what North Korea's motivations and incentives are. What would induce them to stop doing this? And there are a couple things. For one, North Korea wants to be recognized by the United States as a nuclear power. That is something that Washington has not been willing to do, understandably. They want that respect. And that's something that Kim Jong-un, the leader of North Korea, can take back to his people and say, I know I'm young, I know I'm inexperienced, but look, I've got the president of the world's big superpower to acknowledge me and our country as a peer. And so there's some desire for legitimacy here going on in terms of what the North Korean leader wants.
Gene Lee is a global fellow with the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, and she is based in Seoul, and it is from that city that she joins us. Thank you so much, Gene. Now, the UN Security Council is holding emergency talks following the North Korean nuclear test amid reports that Pyongyang is preparing to test yet another ballistic missile. Nikki Haley said the time has come to exhaust all of our diplomatic means before it is too late. Nikki Haley, of course, being the U.S. ambassador to the U.N. She said North Korean leader Kim Jong-un is begging for war with his actions. She says the U.S. doesn't want war, but our patience is not unlimited.
War is never something the United States wants. We don't want it now. But our country's patience is not unlimited. We will defend our allies and our territory. The idea that some have suggested a so-called freeze for freeze is insulting. When a rogue regime has a nuclear weapon and an ICBM pointed at you, you do not take steps to lower your guard. No one would do that. We certainly won't.
We're going to check what people throughout the world of social media are feeling about this with Andrew Palshevsky, our social media guru. What are they talking about?
Well, the woman we just heard from, Nikki Haley, getting a lot of attention with her comments that North Korea is begging for war, comments that she made at that UN Security Council meeting, and that's being shared across social media. We're also seeing a lot of concern, especially after this weekend when there was a moment President Trump and First Lady Melania Trump were leaving church services, and a reporter shouted at them and said, "Will the U.S. attack North Korea?" And he said to the reporter, "We'll see."
We'll see. Yeah.
That was something that caused a lot of concern. And as we've talked before on the show, Ira, social media is one of those things that really makes the world a lot smaller. It's led to the globalization of information. And so we're seeing a lot of concern, not just within the U.S., but from folks around the world, specifically in South Korea and Japan, about this escalating rhetoric. They're saying that the U.S. government is trying to ramp this up, and the citizens of South Korea and Japan are the ones who may end up feeling the consequences.
They're the ones who are right there, obviously.
Exactly. So they're striking out against this. It's not just a domestic issue as far as politics. It's an international issue as far as the potential ramifications.
Now, there's another story going on that President Trump is expected to announce that he'll end protections for young immigrants who were brought into the country illegally as children, but with a six-month delay. It is called the DACA program. That means the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. People talking about that?
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of hashtags like hashtag DACA, hashtag Dreamers. Dreamers is the name that they give these children who came in illegally. And we're seeing a lot of surprise at this announcement from President Trump. From both sides of the aisle, we're seeing politicians lashing out. This is something that both Republicans and Democrats wanted to keep in place.
Not all Republicans. Anyway.
Not all Republicans, but moderate Republicans and most all Democrats. So we're seeing a lot of those people lashing out. It's something that public opinion polls suggest only has a third of support of the American populace to repeal this. So two-thirds of Americans want to keep it in place. We're seeing a lot of people share their stories. It becomes very personal for a lot of people. So students saying that they came here for college and now they won't be able to get a job or they might be deported. There was even one instance I saw where a number of doctors, nurses, and law enforcement officers who helped with the Hurricane Harvey efforts say that they could potentially be deported under this plan if it's rescinded. Really what this boils down to on social media, Ira, is the people saying that these people entered the United States as children. It wasn't their choice. They shouldn't be punished for that. You have immigration or anti-illegal immigration advocates saying they're still illegal immigrants. What they did is still wrong. They still broke the law, and they have to face the consequences.
A huge portion of these Dreamers are coming from south of the U.S. border. Joining us now is Celia Mendoza. She has been part of this program over the past week or so as she was down in the Houston area reporting on the hurricane, tropical storm, and floods caused by Harvey. Celia, you as part of VOA's Latin America section have been covering that. What's the overall feeling? What do you think?
Well, really for them, this is an issue that they have been evaluating for years now. And the possibility that this is going to end means for a lot of families that their children who came out of the shadows that got registered with the government now are in imminent threat of being deported. We're talking about 787,580 people that were approved by March 31st, 2017. Many of them are on the radar of the immigration officers. They are outside of the shadows of being undocumented. They have contributed to this society. And at this point, that's why they're very vocal about what is happening. Mexico is the largest country with the largest number of Dreamers, followed by El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras. Many of these children, now teenagers, young adults, have never been in their country of origin as they remember. They don't relate to those countries. America is their home. And it will be a very, very traumatic situation when we're talking about that if in the next 6 months Congress is not able to come with a solution, that if that happens, if the president ends up doing what most media reports are telling us that he's going to do, which is giving Congress 6 months to get it fixed or completely finishing DACA, then we will be talking about 800,000 almost kids that are right now in colleges that are young professionals coming back to these countries with huge security issues, with the problematics of a system that they don't know. Some of them don't even know Spanish, even though they were born there and their families, some of them speak Spanish. So we're talking about a very, very deep issue, especially because this group of young kids and women are those that don't have any criminal records, those that have shown that they have lived a life as a student, as people that are contributing to this country, and now everything will be pretty much just fall apart. And that's what we have seen Paul Ryan come out publicly, being one of the leaders of the Republican Party, saying we can fix this. And that was something that these groups and immigrant groups are hoping it happens before that 6 months deadline, if that's the decision that President Trump ends up doing.
We shall see. And as we said before, Celia, it is a very divisive issue, not only among the population, but among the Congress as well. Celia Mendoza, correspondent from VOA's Latin American division, with us here on International Edition. Among the top stories in the world, the UN Security Council holds emergency talks on North Korea. President Trump expected to announce a delayed start of a decision to end a program that protects from deportation people who were brought to the United States illegally while they were children. Syrian forces are close to seizing oil-rich Deir ez-Zor from Islamic State. Indonesia is urging Myanmar to prevent further Rakhine violence. 2 days after the Supreme Court annulled presidential election results, Kenyan opposition leader Raila Odinga says his coalition would not share power with thieves, but a new election has now been scheduled. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website and all of our social media platforms. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new study from researchers led by Sukrit Ranjan of the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics suggests ultraviolet light may have played a major role in the development of life on Earth and might be something that could help scientists search for life in the universe. Ranjan and his colleagues came across this possibility after studying red dwarf stars. He says the research suggests these type of stars, which are cooler and smaller than those like our own sun, might not be able to produce the quantity of UV light that could stimulate the sort of life-giving and sustaining processes we have on Earth. Ranjan says it's like having everything you need to start a fire, like wood and kindling, but you don't have a match. He likens the proper amount of ultraviolet light as a kind of match that could ignite the formation of life. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition. When Hurricane Harvey ripped into the Texas-Louisiana Gulf Coast last month, causing untold devastation and upending millions of lives, it also poured a heavy dose of reality into President Trump's political agenda, with disaster relief funding likely to add hundreds of billions of dollars to the federal budget. There'll be some new questions about Trump's centerpiece tax reform proposal, which he says will spur job growth, but which critics call a massive tax cut for corporations and the rich. There are also some new doubts about building his long-planned border wall. As recently as 2 weeks ago, Trump was touting the idea of closing the government if Congress didn't allocate money for a wall along the U.S.-Mexico border. But in the wake of these most expensive natural disasters ever to hit the United States, the idea of using a government shutdown as leverage suddenly seems absurd to many. We'll be following it for you here on International Edition. This is VOA.
Do you love music from Africa and the world? VOA has the latest hits, interviews with the artists, and we are glad to take your requests. The Voice of America has what you're looking for. We have music shows to please everyone. Join us on the radio or on the internet to listen day or night. Go to voanews.com and voaafrica.com and click on your favorite program. Just follow your ears. Music from Africa and the world. We've got it on VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is International Edition. Globally, about a third of all food produced for human consumption is wasted or lost before it can reach consumers. The United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization says even if just one quarter of that food could be saved, it would be enough to feed 870 million hungry people. One initiative to combat food waste and reach the hungry has been catching on in many cities across the world, community refrigerators. As Faiza Al-Masri tells us in this report narrated by Faith Lapidus.
The idea is simple. Instead of throwing away unused, still good-to-eat food, local businesses and residents can leave it in a public refrigerator for others. This new fridge is situated in the heart of London's Brixton district. Neighboring business owners help stock and clean the fridge each day. According to the People's Fridge founders, food waste is a huge issue in Britain. On average, restaurants throw away 900,000 tons of food each year, while households waste the equivalent of 24 edible meals a month. But with 8.4 million people in Britain living in food insecurity, that food could be going to good use, and the People's Fridge helps bridge that gap. Employees at the Ritzy Cinema are now giving their cafe's surplus cakes to the fridge instead of sending them to a landfill.
We heard about it, a staff member had come down and heard about the project, and it just seemed like a great idea. Businesses like ours, we waste a lot of food off, and to then donate it to people who are in need and to help support the community in Brixton, which we're a big part of, is kind of important to us.
A group of 25 food activists came up with the idea of starting the People's Fridge and raised more than $2,500 to start the project.
Food we've put on the shelves or we've had put on the shelves is generally leaving the shelves within 36 hours of it being there. There are lots of people who are in work, who are receiving an income but who still can't afford the rising costs of food and who really benefit from such initiatives. Here, from my experience, it certainly feels like there is demand and the demand is rising.
Anyone can donate food or take it out. The People's Fridge provides a visible focus for cutting food waste and feeding the hungry in London. Founders hope they'll inspire other cities around the world. For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
That's going to wrap it up for us on International Edition today. Find us at voanews.com, like us on Facebook at VOA Now, and on Twitter at VOA_IE. Our thanks to director Patrice Martin, our engineer, the inimitable Daniel Crafton. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your day.
Next, an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
On the first Monday of September every year, the United States pauses to honor its workers and the contributions they make to our nation's prosperity. On September 5, 1882, more than 10,000 men and women paraded through the streets of Manhattan to celebrate the first Labor Day. New York Central Labor Union organized the day of celebration in honor of the workers who fought to secure higher wages, shorter hours, and better working conditions for laborers. It was a day of celebration, but also a day of sacrifice. The workers sacrificed that day's wages to demonstrate their commitment to gaining fair compensation for hard work. American workers transformed the United States and the world with a quality of life never seen in history. American farmers export more food than any country in the world and produce food more efficiently per capita than China and India, the world's largest food producers. The United States exports more refined petroleum than any other country in the world, and it exports more than 40% of the world's spacecraft and aircraft, and more than 11% of the world's electronics. America has the largest road network of any country in the world, with over 6.5 million kilometers of road, over 4.3 million miles of paved road, and over 2.2 million miles of unpaved road. 90% of American households own at least one automobile, and American workers produce almost 3 million cars per year, nearly 5% of cars produced per year worldwide. A key element in America's economic success is the freedom that every American enjoys, the freedom to choose their work, the freedom to innovate and create new industries, and revitalize old ones. What we are witnessing today is the renewal of the American spirit, said President Donald Trump. We do not seek to impose our way of life on anyone, but rather to let it shine, said President Trump. We will shine as an example for everyone to follow.